Hey, good Sunday evening, everybody. Welcome into the Rocket Top Rewind here at VolQuest.com on the YouTube channel. I'm Eric Kane and Brent Hubbs. Our show is presented by our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. If you got a problem, let them find a solution for you. TN Trial Lawyers. That phone number for a free consultation is 423-245-4185, 423-245-4185, and online at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. You got a problem? Let them find a solution for you, TN Trial Lawyers. Got a lot going on over the next hour here on the Rocky Top Rewind. I'm going to look back at Tennessee's 56-0 win over UTEP. Going to chat with Grant Ramey, who was also at that game, but get some talk about Tennessee basketball, a very successful weekend in the Bahamas. Matt Ray is going to join us towards the end of the hour for a little bit of a recruiting angle. Tennessee was a slow start, Brent, but obviously handled business. But the story and the questions that we're going to get into over the next hour, and of course you guys can drop your questions here in the chat, is everything else that went on around college football. Saturday was a whole lot of fun, and thankfully it was an early game that we got to take in the majority of the day, starting with Florida upsetting Ole Miss. Indiana losing by 23 to Ohio State, Alabama losing in the nightcap, Texas A&M losing in the nightcap. It was a fun day and a really good day for Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean, it was a day full of carnage. I mean, it's what it was. I mean, it was just you looked up and you're Tennessee's taking care of business, and so you really start scoreboard watching as much as you can, and you're sitting there and you're just waiting, honestly, waiting for Ole Miss to make a play, right? I mean, you think, okay, they're – because they lived on Florida's side of the field, it felt like. They got, Florida had those two key fourth down stops, and you're thinking, well, they just got to make a play here, and we'll see if we get into overtime or see what happens. They just could never make a play, which is a credit to Florida, and obviously a lot of disappointment to Ole Miss. That, to me, that was the biggest domino. I'm not saying everything else was gravy, but that was the one that superseded everything, in my opinion, because it eliminated Ole Miss from the conversation. And bump Tennessee up the line, if you will. So I would certainly say that was the big one. And then, you got a whole bunch of dessert last night when you talk about what happened to Alabama and what happened to Texas A&M. It was a great night for Tennessee. It was a bad night for Greg Sankey and the rest of the conference because it changes the outlook of the playoff for them. How many can they get in? It's not a great case for the league overall because you had three teams, double-digit underdogs double-digit favorites went on the road and lost. You can make a case winning on the road is hard, but to the Big Ten's credit, Penn State went. It was ugly, but they got it done, and you got some road teams there that went and took care of business. They get some average teams. And in this league, the, quote, playoff teams didn't go beat the 500 teams the way they should have yesterday. And that's not great for the league, but it was great for Tennessee.
Yeah, and kind of looking at it from, in retrospect now, we don't have to get into the weeds in it right now, but, I mean, truly, it's like the NFL. The SEC is beating up on one another. Very realistic chance that the ACC now could be a two-bid league. Big 12 still only going to get one in there, but, other players from the SEC, and it'll be intriguing to see about a three-loss team from one of these conferences. You and I were talking before we took the air. If South Carolina were able to beat Clemson, man, that could get really interesting. Still the SEC championship game loser, but it feels like things opened up. And, Indiana was probably not going to fall out of the field with that loss, but with Ole Miss losing, that's the best thing that happened for Indiana. Indiana's still going to be in the field to play. It just felt like after Saturday, it opened things up for a lot of other teams. It essentially eliminated a couple, even though ESPN's trying to hold on for Alabama. But for Tennessee, it's win and you're in, and it's as simple as that.
Yeah, it is. And again, I mean, Tennessee was the biggest winner, and I think Indiana was the second biggest winner because Indiana's loss doesn't take on the pain that the question right now is not whether or not Indiana will fall out of the rankings or fall out of the projected field. I think they're safely in right now because Alabama's got to fall out. Ole Miss going to fall out. So I think that certainly helps Indiana. I mean, I think that was a nice night for them after a disappointing day where they can overcome that one. So, we'll see. I mean, I think the talk on Tuesday night will be about the carnage of the SEC. I think another winner for this is Penn State probably because there's not going to be a lot of talk about their scheduling. It's going to be more about the carnage of what happened in the SEC. So Penn State gets by for another week of discussion about their scheduling or lack thereof strength of scheduling.
We're going through. We'll take some of your questions as we go on through the hour here on the Rocky Top Rewind. Again, Grant Ramey is going to join us around 8:30. Matt Ray about 8:45. Already got a couple of comments about it, Brent, and I'll just kind of toss it to you on this. Sure. What do you make of David Sanders visiting Ohio State? I think it's a little too early to see if anything came out of that. But obviously, your prize, commitment, Tennessee fans don't want them going anywhere else. But ultimately, this past weekend, David Sanders was at Ohio State.
Well, and he didn't go up there just to take in a football game. Okay, that this was not, hey, I'm bored and I'm going to drive up the road and watch a game. That's not what this was about. Took in a game yesterday, but today, in Columbus is much more about business and where all of that stands and all of those types of things. I think the other question too is, does David Sanders want to be at Tennessee? I think Tennessee's, NIL and everything that the plan and the package they had put together for David Sanders was better than anybody else back in the summer. Maybe somebody got more competitive with it. Austin has mentioned this, that this is not just about a bottom line dollar figure. It may be some wording and some other things that are out there and different things in a contract deal. So, we'll see. I had a wise coach tell him, former coach tell me, a year or so ago when all this got really 2 years ago when it got really hot and heavy, as a coach, at some point the decision has to be made whether they want to play for your program or not. If it's all just about, wording in something or a dollar figure something, then you kind of wonder what you're getting there. And I don't know where David Sanders wants to go to school. He has made it very clear for the last 6 months he wants to go at Tennessee, wants to be at Tennessee. Yeah. His relationships were better. The culture was better. It was closer to home. Everything was the right fit for him at Tennessee. And now suddenly he's spending the weekend in Columbus, Ohio, with Ohio State. I don't see him coming to Tennessee when you look at the schedule and the calendar. Unless he swings through here on a Tuesday, I don't think he's going to come by and see anybody at Tennessee. I don't think he's stopped communicating with people at Tennessee. I don't think he's just gone dark this weekend. I don't think he went dark the week leading up to. I think he's had conversations. So we'll see. I think anybody suggesting that he just went up there to watch a football game is very naive about where we are. And, there's a couple of things, and we'll see what David Sanders does. But, the Bryce Underwood situation, flipping after being committed for 300 days. No. All of those things are things that are things that coaches are, for lack of better words, keeping receipts on. Keep an eye on, wait a minute, what is the landscape of where we are in recruiting right now? What does this look like? So we'll see what happens.
Last thing on this, then we'll move on. What would your advice be to Tennessee fans? Because, right now we just don't know how the visit went and all that. We'll figure it out. But what would your advice be to Tennessee fans this would be a big deal, right? This is your best recruit one of the best players in the country.
Yeah, you can't suddenly come back and say, well, he wasn't good enough. That's not the case. Tennessee has sought him and gone hard after David Sanders, as hard as they've gone after anybody. And, when he committed, it was a big deal. And it was a love affair like you would not believe. And, so if you were to lose him, it would be a blow. No doubt. You go into the next one. Welcome to recruiting. It feels different because you don't know if you lose a guy, you don't know why. Was he just leading everybody along the way? I don't think that was the case. But we'll see what happens. If he spurs Tennessee at the end, it won't be the first time it's happened in recruiting. It just feels different because now we're talking about business transactions.
Yeah.
Whereas before it was something weird, right? Like maybe it was a girlfriend or they didn't have a Chick-fil-A in that town or, they wanted to go, it was all a ruse. They really weren't committed. They were just trying to deflect everybody, whatever. This is different, but it's still the same result. There's a lot of people who have been shocked on signing day through the years, Tennessee being one of them. And that's just part of recruiting, fair or unfair. Now, I'm not saying he's gone. See what happens. What I'm saying is I've seen some people say, well, he just went up there to watch a game. I don't believe that to be the case. I also don't believe that it's, quote, done and he's decommitted and it's over. But we're a week away from signing day. And obviously he's spending a good bit of time with his family in Columbus, Ohio for conversations about what all's going on.
Yeah, recruiting never stops. When you think you're in a good spot, just, hey, head on a swivel, right?
Yeah, and this is different, too, because you've got so many more people involved in the process now. Yeah. You know, with guys having agents and having contracts out there and all those things, that it's not necessarily the emotional roller coaster of making a decision as it once was. Okay, because not everything is all equal, you know, and somebody is telling you got to do this or you got to do that or you want to do this. That's why I say at some point in time, I think the recruit has to decide, where do I want to go to school? If everything's quote equal or close to equal, you know, and it's hard for 17 or 18 year olds because a lot of people are putting things in their head. But at some point you got to decide, where do I want to go to school? And do I have the ability to go wherever I want to go, or am I kind of hand tied by where everybody around me wants to go? So we'll have to see.
You know, BG brings up a good point right here. Say Tennessee were to lose on David Sanders, but just, you know, in general this offseason, Tennessee's losing some offensive linemen. Just go get someone out of the portal. Tennessee's done that as a Band-Aid, and I'll take that back, more than a Band-Aid. John Campbell's been a big player for Tennessee. Gerald Mincy was for 2 years. Andre Kierick right now. But offensive line always isn't the best plug and play, specifically in this offense. I mean, it's a case-by-case thing. You know, I don't think Tennessee's going to be the market for a center, losing Cooper Mays, but it's not as easy, I would say, just to say, well, hey, go to the portal and just grab somebody, right?
Well, no, but you've had to be there because you haven't developed anybody or had anybody develop, you know, who's underclassmen ready to go. Now, we'll see what – I'm fascinating to see once we get past this weekend and kind of get into the first part of December. I mean, what do they think about – really, what do they think about where Jesse Perry is? What do they think about where Satterwhite is and Max Anderson is and all those types of things? Where's Larry Johnson Jr. or Larry Johnson III? I mean – Glenn Ellerbe was on Vol calls last Wednesday night, and he spoke very highly of those guys. And it's great. I'm not trying to discredit Glenn Ellerbe, but you know that he's talked. All of those offensive coaches, in particular, have talked up a lot of their guys. You know, but where are they really with some of those guys? Right? I mean, you know, Glenn Ellerbe has talked up Brian Grant and other people for over a year, and those guys haven't really been a factor. So, what do they think about what they have? How ready do they think those guys can be? And then what can you go plug in, you know, get to plug in and go plug and play? Do you feel like you need to go, you know, get three or four guys over top of what you have on your roster? Do you need one guy? Do you need a depth piece? What are you looking for? I think we're going to find out pretty quickly here as you get ready for the portal to open up in the early part of December.
Yeah, Tennessee had a couple big-time recruits on campus anyway. Isaiah Campbell was back on campus. Dwan Morris was on campus. We'll get it with Matt Ray and continue this conversation later in the show. Let's do get to the game at hand, man. It was ugly. It was gross at the time. So it was such a great afternoon for Tennessee, but that first 15 minutes, Tennessee looked awful on offense against UTEP. Indiana was beating Ohio State, and you're just like, oh my gosh, what's going on? You know, and then it all got better. Slow start, fast finish. Tennessee does exactly what it's supposed to do. 56-0 over UTEP. Defense forced 3 turnovers, gave up only 81 on the ground. Contain, yeah, it's a little bit of an issue, but I think, as you wrote in your 10 things I think I learned, probably a good little opening act for what you're going to see next week with Vanderbilt's quarterback, Diego Pave. And but the offense, Nico, finished so much better than where he started. He was kind of gross looking there at the beginning, but he came along and 4 touchdowns. And I thought Tennessee did a good job of getting guys involved, right? Ethan Davis on that one drive, Mike Matthews on one drive specifically, Brew McCoy into the end zone. Dylan Sampson kind of got that going on that 4th series as well. Bad start, good finish, expected outcome, Tennessee 56-0 over Temple.
Yeah, and I think you have to be careful, one, to just completely discredit the win because UTEP's not very good, right? But you can't give too much credit to the win because UTEP's not very good. So what do you take away from it? I think that big picture, you take away some things you saw from some of the younger players that you feel good about. I think injury-wise, you don't have anything major. I know there's been some questions over in the chat about that. I don't think there's anything significant with James Pierce Jr. at this point. I don't believe there's anything significant with Omar Norman Lott at this point either. So I think you probably got through that okay. It was good to get some guys involved. You know, does that mean Ethan Davis is going to be involved this week? I mean, it's hard to say that he's going to. Does that mean Mike Matthews is suddenly going to be a big factor this week? 11 games in tells me probably not. but it was good to get those guys involved moving forward. I do like where Peyton Lewis is, because I think Peyton Lewis is going to have to be a factor in Nashville. I think Peyton Lewis is getting better with each and every week. I think the game's slowing down. I think he's running with more confidence. I thought he had pretty good confidence coming in. He was starting to build because he did okay in Athens, Georgia. That was a nice – yesterday was a nice lift of confidence for him. He ran over some people, and, you know, he finished with a couple of touchdowns. That should get his juices going pretty good. So I thought that was certainly a positive. It was good to get Caleb Herring as much work as he did. Bad that he jumped off sides three times, but it was good to get him as much work as he got. I thought Hobbs played well. So there was some good things to come out of it. I thought Tennessee, and this was a little maddening in some ways, but good in some other ways. There was some creativity involved offensively. We saw some stuff we haven't seen. It didn't work, but the Mike Matthews in motion play at the goal line or inside the 10-yard line is something we hadn't really seen before. They threw a kind of a deep out or a little post corner almost to tight end to Kitzelman. We hadn't really seen that. They threw that arrow route to Dylan Sampson. I don't think we've seen that one all year.
Good looking play.
So there was a couple of wrinkles in there that was kind of nice. I think Tennessee's going to need a couple of wrinkles on Saturday against Vanderbilt. So we'll see where this offense goes from there. I really like the arrow route to Sampson. I thought that one got Nico going, kind of got Tennessee into some kind of flow and a real rhythm. And now he obviously ran with it from there.
Yeah, you know, that fourth series when things got going for Tennessee, I thought they – and we talked about this on the post-game podcast. Like, I thought they brought everything in. It was like, okay, well, we're going to try to be who we are and splash plays, throw it down the field. And you line up, and you're Tennessee and you're UTEP, and you should be able to do that. But, hey, it wasn't working, right? They brought it in, brought everything's closer to Nico. Quick passing game. They got Sampson involved. They were winning the early downs. Tempo followed, and then you really were kind of who you were. I think Peyton Lewis had a target. He actually dropped one that was, you know, Nico finished, I want to say, 15-19 after a start. Should have been 16-19 because that drop from Peyton Lewis would have been a first down. But they threw it to him once. They threw it to Dylan Sampson twice. Really the first time they've involved the backs in the passing game since, man, I want to say NC State. So talking about wrinkles, I thought that was pretty good. In terms of the Ethan Davis, Mike Matthews drives, like when I was on my rewatch, I really just noticed that like they were pinpointing those guys. And I don't want to make this sound like a bad statement or anything, but like those guys are obviously, you know, high ceiling guys. And those are guys Tennessee wants to be involved a whole lot moving forward. Right. If you ask Mike Matthews and Ethan Davis, I would assume that they're probably like, yeah, this has not been my best year. This is not what I envisioned coming into the year. And a game like this against UTEP, I think it's easy to say, we're going to get you in the end zone. We're going to target you, get you in the end zone, just like with Brew McCoy. And I thought that was kind of what they were doing. Sure, Ethan Davis has played some. Mike Matthews has played some. But the roles they envisioned for this year, I don't think that's – just like Caleb Webb against whatever team it was last year, it was Webb and Nimrod both got touchdowns in that game because in a game like that, you can afford to kind of get you yours, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I think that's why you have to be careful about how much stock you put into what happened yesterday about, oh, okay, there's this, there's that. Because clearly they went in with some specific things in mind to try to get some guys some points. And, you know, they wanted to get Mike Matthews in the end zone. Defensive end messed that play up. You know, they clearly wanted to get Ethan Davis in. I'm just fascinated. I wrote this because it was hard to find a lot of 10 things out of that game, to be honest with you. But the more I watched that one drive with Ethan Davis, it's like, you know, that's a toy you can do a lot with, but it's kind of like they're not sure what to do. And I'm not sure that Ethan Davis has given them enough to show them what to do. So he's kind of the pretty car in the garage. Like, you know, you're going to get him out. Well, it's a little cloudy. It might take a chance of rain, you know, or you know, nah, I mean, I just burns a little too much gas. I'm going to go drive my other car today or whatever. Like, it feels like they're a little bit unsure of what he's going to be. Okay. And I know what you want him to be. I don't know if that's exactly what he's ever going to be as a true inline tight end who can do everything. I'm not sure that's his game. So what do you do with him? How do you play with him? Is he a guy who's going to be a two tight end guy? Do you play more in the slot and make him kind of a bigger receiver? That's not a question to solve this week, but I think it's going to be a question to solve and look into moving forward in the offseason. Assuming that Ethan Davis is back next year, and I don't have any reason to believe that he's not going to be, but we are moving into that time of year. And as you mentioned, it's not going exactly the way he thought it would go. But they need him next year because they need tight end help with Kitzelman, you know, being gone and out of the program.
It's well, like early in the season, when they're trying to run their hurry-up offense, when they're playing from behind, you know, at Arkansas or, you know, in that second half and things aren't working against Oklahoma, but you're going four wide, let me rephrase that, you're going doubles on each side, but you still have your tight end out there because you need a tight end for this offense. But, like, if your base in that, you know, two-minute drill or whatever is, you know, four wide, instead of having Kitzelman out there, I mean, put Ethan Davis out there. Like, that was my frustration kind of earlier in the year, but we're in an era of college football where you literally just never know. So getting him in the end zone, I think, was a good move by Tennessee yesterday.
Well, here was an interesting thing, too, is we typically haven't seen Tennessee design something or scheme something up for a specific player. Now, the Chris Braswell touchdown against Alabama, they inverted the receivers, got Braswell from outside, moved him into the slot, and ran the fade there. They moved Brew McCoy into the slot for a touchdown yesterday, specifically designed to get him that touchdown there, which makes you kind of wonder, like, could you not design a few things for some of your younger guys? Maybe they don't have to know all of it, but hey, here's three or four things in a small package that we're going to run, because clearly they packaged some things yesterday just to get guys stats, numbers, end zone, whatever, on senior day for some of those guys. Wonder if they can do that a little bit more than what they've done this year, and if that's something they look at moving forward so that you can get younger players involved, you know, in different ways, you know, earlier in the season, particularly at the receiver spot with some of these young guys.
Brad wants to know, why didn't Jake Merklinger play? I think it was simply senior day. You know, Nico got his work in. They let Gaspipe go in there for a little bit, and then, of course, Navy Shuler. So nothing there. I think it was simply just a senior day situation. A couple more of these questions I want to hit. Forrest wants to know, Brent, has there ever been a snow game at Neyland? Don't want to count my chickens before the eggs hatch, but a home playoff game in the snow would be insane. That'd be a whole lot of fun. And, you know, we were kind of talking on our group text message last night, watching all these games unfold, and I was trying to sit here and do a mock ranking and then trying to figure out the seeding off of that for what we're going to see on Tuesday night. Tennessee's going to be right around that host line. I don't think they'll get it this Tuesday, but certainly in play to get it over the course of the next couple of weeks before the playoffs actually start. That would be pretty awesome on December 19th or 20th if there was snow and Tennessee was hosting a game. Have you ever covered or seen a football game at Neyland in the snow?
I have not covered a game in the snow. I mean, there might have been a game somewhere along the way where there was some flurries in the air and some things, but there's not been a game where the field was white or anything like what we saw in South Carolina. What year was that with Butch? Maybe 14? I think maybe 14 when he went over there. And it was crazy cold and then like and just come out of the blue snow type deal. But no, I've not seen one of those in Neyland. It'd be fun. I mean, you know, it's just hosting would be such an event. Would just be crazy if Tennessee could climb that high. I think they got to have some help to do that. But it would be crazy if Tennessee could end up being a team that's hosting a game, because I think the atmosphere would just be totally bananas. I mean, just crazy. I think they're going to be crazy anywhere that's hosting a playoff game, because it's going to be something unlike we've ever seen. I mean, they've never played a game on your campus that would be a, quote, season-ending game. You know, that they play games where you say, well, if you lose this game, you're out. You're out of contention for the Eastern Division, or you're out of contention for to go to the championship game. But never have you – in college football, you haven't had a game on a home field where you say winner advances, loser turns in their pads.
Yeah,
you have it in baseball, you know, when you're hosting super regionals, and if you're a host, if you're a regional host and you don't get out, but really, I mean, that's the only sport, you know, those softball, baseball are really the only sports that happens, because the basketball is a tournament sport, you know, that's on a neutral floor, and football's been on a neutral site deal. So this would be a totally bananas situation where, you know, if you win, you advance, if you lose, you know, you're closing everything up, and we'll see in 9 months, you know, 10 months, basically, which is totally different.
Michael says, not one high school recruit from Heupel era on the offensive line is starting. Not talking about transfers. Is Ellerby a good developer or not? This is something we've talked about before. And, you know, Michael's right. There's not been one high school guy that you've recruited, signed, brought on campus, developed. Now he's starting in this era. But in terms of development, I mean, Darnell Wright was a top 10 draft pick. And I understand he was a blue chipper coming in. He had some talent. But Darnell Wright of the previous regime was not getting drafted 10th overall. So I think you point to that. I think Cooper Mays has turned into a really, really nice player. Jerome Carvin had some success. But to Michael's point, absolutely, that's something that in year four is still kind of hard to believe. But there has been development there, but it's got to come from the high school ranks at some point.
Well, absolutely it does. You know, I mean, they went and got Lance Hurd to solidify their tackle situation this year. It was John Campbell the year before to solidify the tackle. They went and got Andre Kurchit to be a guard. And he's ended up taking over that job there. At some point, those guys have to play. And Austin said this the other day, maybe it was on a podcast. I don't know where we were talking about this. At some point, you're not going to have a choice. You know, like all these guys, I mean, Spragans is leaving. I mean, Cooper Mays is leaving. You know, I don't think Andre's going to win his appeal. I think he'll be gone. John Campbell's gone. Dane Davis is gone. You know, Jackson Lampley is gone. So at some point, you have to play some of these young guys because you're not going to go get five guys in the portal or four guys in the portal and say, hey, you're our four starters. So we're getting ready to find out is the answer to that question. You can make the case maybe they haven't had that. I mean, they haven't had that need so much because of the veterans that they've had who played the extra year. But you're getting ready to answer that question is what I'm saying with all the departures that you have coming.
We got plenty more time to get into. We'll answer your questions. We got Garrett Ramey going to join the show here in a matter of moments, get his take on Tennessee's win over UTEP, all of what happened on Saturday in college football, and, of course, Tennessee basketball. Matt Ray's coming on here in just a little bit. But first, I do want to give a shout-out to our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP, presenting sponsors of this show. Great guys. They're Tennessee fans, just like you and I. Matthew A. Spivey, J. Matt King, Richard A. Spivey. You got a problem, let them find a solution for you, TNTrial Lawyers. They specialize and things such as criminal defense, family law, personal injuries, car wrecks, accidents, divorce, custody, alimony, all that and more. 80 years of combined experience, Spivey King and Spivey LLP. They provide representation throughout state and federal courts in Northeast Tennessee. The firm has a vast amount of trial experience. The practice has been in place for 43 years. This specific partnership since 2012 also have partners who are energized and ready for today's modern legal demands. Practicing primarily in Northeast Tennessee, the Tri-Cities is Sullivan County, as well as Hawkins County, Washington County, and surrounding areas. Whether you've been injured in a car accident, need help with a divorce, help with custody of your children, or you've been accused of a crime, Spivey King and Spivey LLP can help you. 142 Cherokee Street, Kingsport, Tennessee. You can pick up the phone and dial this number for a free consultation. That is 423-245-4185, or visit them online at SpiveyKingandSpiveyLLP.com. You got a problem? Let them find a solution for you, TN Trial Lawyers. And we'll go back into the Rocky Top Rewind. Sunday nights here in football season here on the VolQuest.com YouTube channel. I'm Eric Kane, Brent Hubbs. Now we welcome on Grant Ramey. And before we get going, Grant, I think Brent has some flowers that he wants to give you for your score prediction the other day.
56-0, nailed it.
I told my dad I learned it from Leonard's Losers growing up. Listen to that on the radio if you remember. Eric, you're probably too young for that.
It was not the original Leonard's Losers, but I had to produce or you know get that show ready on the radio back when I was at the station.
I can tell you when I was a student working at WUTK AM 850 at the time, All News 850, I had to take the reel-to-reel of Leonard's Losers and get it produced and ready to go to run every Friday. So fully well-versed in Leonard's Losers.
I remember vividly riding to Knoxville for home games with my dad, and I would hear Gus and Haywood, and I would think they're doing voices like Leonard's Losers does voices. Like, they don't really talk like that. They really talk like that.
They absolutely talk like that in the locker room.
Yep.
I want to give you some flowers as well. Going into, I guess, the Georgia game, you know, you and I on GameQuest, and I mean, we all talked about it on our podcast. Based on what the committee ranked Tennessee, essentially what they said that week was, hey, Tennessee, if you're going to be in these playoffs, as things stand right now, you got to win this game. And, I mean, of course, there's a lot of season left to play, but that's what the committee told us that week. But I remember you saying, because you've covered, bracketology for years and years and years, saying, well, always things can be crazy. Things can happen. There's still going to be a whole lot of things that can shake things up. So I don't think this is a true elimination game. Well, lo and behold, Grant Ramey Saturday was wild as wild could get. Which outcome were you most surprised with that helped Tennessee on Saturday?
I mean, I guess Alabama, Oklahoma, I don't think Tennessee was relying on that outcome at all, but just the way Alabama got whipped, I mean, the way Oklahoma played that game, the way Oklahoma's defense, whatever they did to make Alabama's offense look the way it did, Jalen Milroe, I mean, he looked shook for most of that game. That was crazy to me. Obviously, Auburn, Texas A&M, I mean, Nick Saban kind of called his shot on game day. He said Jordan Hare's haunted. He has some firsthand experience there. Probably those two. Obviously, Ole Miss. It's tough to go to Gainesville and win. I mean, who knows better than people that have watched Tennessee football for the last 30 years. Like, that's a tough place to play. DJ Lagway is really, really good. He's playing really well. And shout out to Billy Napier. Everybody had him dead and buried weeks ago. He has found a way to keep this team playing and playing well and kind of, I don't know, they looked lost to start the season. Here they are kind of getting in everybody's way when it matters.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating, and it's just a reminder of just how hard this sport is, how crazy it is. You know, I mean, it's basketball. It's about getting hot at the right time,
right?
Getting a good matchup, getting a good draw, if you will. In college football, it's about, you got to do it consistently. And I mean, to sit here and think, I mean, I'd love to know what the league office is thinking right now. I mean, you know, because the league office is thinking, all right, we got three teams going on the road, which going on the road is hard, but they're double-digit favorites. Okay, we're going to be okay, you know, for the strength of the conference. And they went 0-3 in those games. The road's hard, and playing at your peak every week, Grant, seems to be harder and harder than harder than it's ever been. Is the right way.
I mean, you go back a week ago, what Heupel was saying after that Georgia game, he was basically echoing the same exact point that Kirby Smart made during his press conference, because he started talking about the playoff, and he said it's hard to go on the road and win. He was talking about Ole Miss and what Georgia looked like the week before Kirby Smart was, and that was after Josh Heupel sat there in his press conference and said the same thing. It's hard to win on the road in this league. And at this point, it feels like we're talking about elimination games a couple weeks ago. Now it feels like we're trying to find people to get in this playoff, because everybody's going to have three losses. Like, who's going to take these last few spots? Like, what's it going to look like? What are the numbers from these conferences? And maybe the elimination game, I don't know. It's just a fun talking point, I guess, to hype up a game. But, man, you just never know what's going to happen, especially in the SEC. When you go on the road in this league, night games, all that stuff, it's tough to win. But, you know, Tennessee, here we are. They've put themselves in a position where go to Vanderbilt and handle your business, and you should have a spot in the dance. So that's all that matters, right?
Yeah, Grant, you wrote a story kind of based off what ESPN thinks that the college football playoff rankings are going to be on Tuesday night, the projections. I was trying to do my own mock projection on Saturday night, so we've been down in the weeds a little bit. Do you think the ACC now gets two teams in? Big 12 is only going to get one. You know, we'll see what happens with the rest of the conference champions, who ends up being the fifth highest ones. But it feels like there's some room now, because the SEC is just kind of beating each other up, to where SMU, Clemson's in play here. The ACC might sneak another team in there and not just be the conference champion. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't really know how the numbers work out. I was trying to think about that earlier. Like, are there going to be four teams from the SEC at this point? Because who's that fourth team? You would assume Texas is in. You would assume Georgia's in. Right now it looks like Tennessee's in, if Tennessee handles its business at Vanderbilt. And then what? Alabama, I mean, they're a three-loss team. They look like garbage Saturday night in Oklahoma. South Carolina, I don't think anybody would want to play South Carolina right now. They're a three-loss team. I don't know if anybody from the ACC has that kind of resume, but at the same time, it's the way the SEC's cannibalized itself. It's going to be hard to find X number of spots from a conference and just kind of, you know, I don't know. The committee has a lot of work to do in front of it. I don't envy them because of the way these teams are playing. I guess they kind of solved a little bit of the logjam with the SEC and what happened Saturday night. But I don't know how these numbers work out and where they come from, because the more we play, the more complicated it gets.
Yeah, I think the ACC is the one conference that's fascinating. Because, I mean, is there anybody else in the Big Ten who could factor in? It doesn't feel like it, right? They've got their four. Seems like that's where they are. Now the SEC, maybe they're playing themselves on the bubble for four teams. The Big 12 is only going to get two. So what happens in the ACC? Can an SMU and Miami play in a championship game and the loser still gets in at two losses? What's going to be the punishment for losing the championship game? Can, you know, what if it's you know, I guess Miami or Clemson, whoever wins that tiebreaker, one's going to eliminate themselves by not winning the tiebreaker. So I think the only two teams that can get in the ACC feels like are the only two teams that are going to be playing in the championship game. But what does that look like? What if that is Clemson and SMU, and Clemson gets beat? They're a three-loss team. They out. Is Miami in at that point as a second team? And I think the ACC is the unknown ground here, and because I've had them as a one bid team or one bid league the whole time. Now with the SEC opening up for them, can they really get two? And what does that look like? And what's the punishment going to be for losing your championship game?
And I don't think anybody wants to de-incentivize championship games because they make money for their leagues, I would assume. I don't know. I assume the SEC prints their own money at the SEC title game, but you don't exactly want to punish those teams that play an extra game while other teams are sitting at the house and just waiting on the bracket to be revealed.
Grant, let's shift gears here. Let's talk about hoops. Tennessee, a very successful Thursday and Friday down in the Bahamas. Playing shorthanded at times, but I want to start out with Darlin Stone Dubar, a non-factor the first couple games of the season, made his Tennessee debut on Thursday night. He gave Tennessee some good minutes. I'm not saying he's going to come in and be a superstar now, but I feel like after seeing what you saw from him this past weekend, you feel good about he can be a guy that can help you down the line.
Yeah, we were at practice on Monday, and you could tell it was a little bit different with him in terms of he was basically a full participant. He was just another guy on the floor. Like, he was doing everything his teammates were doing. That was the first time we had seen him do that, Monday or Tuesday. I can't remember what day that was. But the start of the week, he started to go back to being a full participant. And I think the JP Estrella foot injury, I think the Cam Carr thumb injury, you only had 11 scholarships. You had two open spaces, so you're down to nine guys. You're down to eight guys. You kind of take out Bishop Boswell's minutes because he's not going to play a ton. So they had to kind of force the issue there a little bit, and I think he gave them good minutes. I think he gave them a little bit of a energy, a little bit of a boost off the bench to give them something that they weren't sure they were going to have or at what point they're going to have him. But I think the injury situation changed that. And I mean, he's a good player. He averaged 17 at Hofstra last year. He scored 24-8 at Duke. Like, he knows what to do with the basketball. Anything he can give them, which what he did at the Bahamas, that's great, because you need that production. You need the body off the bench. You need anything he can give you.
There's a little bit of versatility to his game, right? I mean, I know, you know, you go big lineups, small lineups and all that, but, you know, wing, play a little bit down low. I mean, he's not a tiny guy. He's not a huge guy, but feels like he's a guy that can help kind of fill some spots while Tennessee is a little bit shorthanded.
Yeah, I think that's the emphasis too, because you lost a 6'10 center, 6'11 center in JP Estrella, and you lost a wing in Cam Carr, and you need somebody that kind of can help you replace minutes at both of those. Now, he's not going to play the center like JP Estrella would, but he could get down there down low, and they could play a small ball four with him, just like they did with Josiah Jordan James, like they've done with Jemai Meshack, like they do with Igor Milicic. So yeah, he gives them some small ball versatility, can play different ways with him on the floor. I think he can hold his own down low if he has to. He can obviously play on the wing because that's what he's made a career doing. So I think the versatility piece is a big deal when you're limited on bodies.
You know, Grant, when you look at this team to this point, I mean, you know, look, they're always rooted in defense, and their defense has been outstanding to start the season, without a doubt. But to me, I'm not in the camp of this is Rick's best team because they've played five games. I don't know what they are yet. We'll have to wait and see. But they seem to be as versatile as any team that Barnes has had. They can legitimately go big. They could legitimately go small ball pretty comfortably. I mean, they do feel like they can play a lot of different styles, at least early on. Fair or not fair?
Yeah, that's fair. They're versatile. I think they're maybe a little bit more athletic than they've been in the past. I've been extremely impressed. When I watched them against Indiana, I thought they were a pretty average basketball team. When I watched them against Gardner-Webb first game of the season, I thought pretty average basketball team. When they went to Louisville and ratcheted up on the defensive end the way they did and started playing that Rick Barnes level of defense, that really impressed me, and the way they handled themselves on the road. Louisville's not great, but that was a near capacity crowd in Louisville. It's a big game, first big game of the Pat Kelsey era. So for them to be as not dominant as they were there impressed me. And then obviously what we've seen the last couple of weeks, the way they handled their business last week, what they did in the Bahamas, the way they started against Baylor offensively and defensively and handled a team like that. I think they're versatile. I think they're athletic. the numbers still concern me, only having 11, and you know, now you're down two more guys. So long term, those numbers, you're going to have a lot of guys playing a lot of minutes. But right now, all we've seen from them so far, this little sample size that we've seen, they've been very, very impressive.
Yeah, the other thing too is, I mean, they got all these new bodies, so you don't think of it this way. It's a pretty veteran team. I mean, like, they understand, they should understand they're in a marathon, not a sprint. So, right. Like, you're not peaking too early because you know you're looking for your best basketball 4 months from now, you know, 3.5 months from now. Because, again, there are a bunch of new faces, but it's a bunch of new people that know how to manage yourself through an entire season, which gives you – it makes basketball unique when you talk about assembling a team together the way Barnes has with so many new faces.
Yeah, I mean, you think about Jemai and Zakai, kind of the head of the snake defensively, and the veteran, you know, those two guys are, how long they've been around, how much basketball they've played together. When you're starting right there in the backcourt with those two guys, that's a really, really good place to start. And Darlin Stone Dubar, I mean, he started his career at Iowa State. He spent the last three at Hofstra. Igor started at Virginia, spent the last couple of years at Charlotte. Now he's here. Felix has been around Ohio State. He's played in big games. There's other guys on this roster that, you know, and they're not playing their best basketball yet. Like, Chaz shot the lights out against Baylor the other night. He's scoring really well. Igor's playing really well, but we haven't seen the best basketball from Zakai Ziegler. Like, he's kind of still struggling to get it a little bit. So I think there's a lot of good basketball ahead of them. And yeah, they are kind of underrated veterans. They're just not veterans that have played together, and I think they've been kind of figuring it out these first few weeks, and I think they're starting to pick up speed, kind of progressing towards that, figuring it out, because the way we've seen them play.
Dustin wants to know, does Mayshak have any NBA draft stock?
Yeah, I think so, because of how elite you can be defensively, how versatile you can be. I think his offense has improved a ton. I think he's worked a ton on his jump shot, and I think that will continue. I don't think you ever have to question the amount of work that guy's going to put in. And I think if you're that defensive and you're that versatile, somebody's going to be willing to take a chance on you. I think he could be a Josh Richardson. I think that's the obvious comparison based on his defense. I don't think he'll ever be what Jay Rich is offensively, but I think he could work towards that and be some kind of example of that, or kind of work toward that, I guess.
Well, Chaz Leonard is pretty good, isn't he?
Man, I was sitting on the couch whatever night that was, Friday night at Baylor, and I've got the live stat feed on an iPad here to my left, and I've got the TV on, and I'm streaming the game. So the stat feed will update like a possession ahead of the stream. And I just kept looking left, and it was like, Chaz Lanier made a three. Chaz Lanier made a three. Chaz Lanier made a three. Chaz, I was like, is this wrong? What's going on here? Like, is this actually happening? Like, I've never seen anything like that. 5 for 5 in the first 4 minutes of a basketball game is absolutely absurd.
We'll let you go, man. I know you got a lot going on at the house, but where do you think Tennessee is going to be ranked, and I guess seated would be the better phrase. Where is Tennessee going to be seated Tuesday night?
Probably 9th or something, just close enough to hosting to make it interesting, but probably still on the road. But I mean, if carnage this week is anything like carnage last week, I think Tennessee could still find its way into hosting a playoff game in the first round. I mean, we'll see what happens at this point. Anything can happen, it feels like.
Grant, appreciate it, buddy. Thanks for joining us.
All right. See you, boys.
See you, Grant. Right. Thanks, man.
Grant Ramey, VolQuest.com. We say goodbye to Grant. We bring on Matt Ray, who does a little bit of everything for us. He's down there on the field shooting some highlights in the Tennessee football games, and of course, covering Tennessee recruiting. Before we get into recruiting, because there's a lot of recruiting conversation and questions over here, your big takeaways from the game, again, expected outcome, 56-0, but hey, Tennessee was bad offensively and then flipped that switch, and it was a completely different ball game. 28 points in the second quarter, 21 points in the third quarter. And then the reserves got to get in there in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, you got what you expected in the second quarter. You know, you got what you expected in the first quarter and the second quarter. You know, if you're Tennessee, I think you have to avoid that sluggish start on the road this weekend against Vanderbilt. Weather's going to be nasty. Look, you know, this isn't a shot at Vanderbilt, but this is their Super Bowl. I mean, right now, I mean, they're coming off a loss to LSU, a physical ball game that they were in really for the duration, and Tennessee sitting here firmly back in the playoff mix, you know, after a week ago, you know, not having really any control, the Vols control their destiny. And if you're Vanderbilt, you're hoping to play spoiler in this one, right? So if you're Tennessee, you got to come out and you got to, you know, kind of control the pace of the game early, because Diego Pavia is going to make some plays and Vanderbilt's going to do some things defensively that, you know, give you a little bit of trouble. So we'll see. But if you're Tennessee, you just got to start fast this week.
Well, tell us about David Sanders. What do you make of him going to Ohio State? I know there's a lot of questions right now where you might not have the answers to, but obviously it's a hot topic of conversation. What do you make of David Sanders going to Ohio State this past weekend?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a huge topic of conversation when your crown jewel of the recruiting class shows up on another school's campus this late in the cycle, and given the fact that it's Ohio State, who was really right there in the thick of things in August when he committed to Tennessee. It was Tennessee, Ohio State, and then Nebraska, all, you know, those two right there neck and neck. So, you know, at this point, you know, it's not ideal. Ohio State's very much in play here. You know, we'll see if this visit, you know, does anything for the Sanders family, and we'll see if they talk coming out of it. But, you know, it's going to be a kind of a track meet here to the finish line, you know, really 9 days now until the early signing period opens. And obviously David doesn't have to do anything the first day of that signing period or the second day. This can extend out, you know, further. So not to suggest that it will, but, you know, there's still some runway left here with Ohio State very much in play now.
And I bet he doesn't talk.
Yeah, I'm going to say that he doesn't talk either. We'll see if the family does. They've talked at different times, even when things were at crunch time, more so, you know, mom or dad giving some quotes here and there. But I kind of feel like they're not going to talk coming out of this
one. Yeah, I think it's going to be all speculation, and we'll see. I mean, it would not shock me, and I don't know anything, but it wouldn't even surprise me if nothing was said and then he just signed whatever day he signed with whoever he signed with and never went through the graphic of, you know, I'm solid here or I'm flipping or whatever, that he just – does whatever he does on signing day. Would not shock me at all if they went that direction.
Well, guys, correct me if I'm wrong here, Matt, Brent, you know, it feels like, and again, we're not in those meeting rooms and everything. So, but it feels like from a Tennessee's perspective, I mean, you're right there. Like your competition, your makeup, you know, and every aspect of this recruitment has been more than competitive. It feels like you've got a lot to offer. So like, I mean, the easiest thing for fans is, oh, Tennessee needs to ante up. Tennessee needs to play football. Tennessee wants to win championships. Here you go. Like, it feels like this is just more than that, right? Like, it's not anything Tennessee necessarily did wrong.
No, you're absolutely right. It's not anything Tennessee necessarily did wrong. It's not anything Glenn Ellerbe did wrong. You know, I mean, obviously he's the offensive line coach, but there's just a lot of working pieces in this one, you know, that are going to play out one way or another in the next 8-9 days. And you're right, Eric. It's not anything that Tennessee did wrong. It's not anything that Ohio State necessarily did right. It's the Sanders family trying to get to a spot where they feel comfortable with a recruiting process that's gone on for 4 years. I mean, he's been a national recruit for 4 years, and they've got to get to a spot where they feel comfortable with everything from, you know, in the meeting room to – off the field, NIL and everything else. There's just a lot at play in a recruitment like this. And you're going to see this in a lot of big time recruitments. When you look around this cycle, NIL certainly has changed the landscape in the recruiting world in a lot of different ways, but it feels a lot more like the older days because you've got so many guys out to so many different campuses right now. I mean, you start looking across the country at four highly rated 4-stars and 5-stars that are committed, and they're on other schools' campuses right now. They're out there making these visits, you know, checking off boxes. Not to say that didn't happen, before, you know, in the last couple of years, but now with the way that things are shifting even more, these guys are taking more visits, spending more time, really diving into things. It's a really interesting time in the recruiting
world. Well, and I think too, Matt, there's so many different variables with that. You know, before, and I see a couple of comments about, you know, commitment doesn't mean anything. I mean, for years, commitment has been, that means you get start getting recruited, you know, when you commit somewhere. But what's different now is there's the variable that is so brand new that everybody's trying to get a handle on, and that's the NIL variable. And there's different layers to the NIL deal. There's language, there's wording. There's how things are crafted in the deals versus just a raw number. Like, you know, it's not somebody sliding a napkin over to the family and go, hey, here's what you're going to get a month. You know, I mean, these things are high profile, highly discussed, highly talked about things now from a business side of it. And I think that that's the challenge everybody's trying to figure out, because it's not just the emotions. Now, if you get all the deals even and everything, then it becomes emotional, you know, but if one person's willing to language it up the way you want to versus another one, or somebody drastically offers you more money than the other one offers. I mean, think about this. I mean, we're 10 days away, or it was 10 days ago, Pete Nakos put out Michigan's prepared to put X number of dollars on the table for Bryce Underwood, you know, and that has nothing to do with LSU doing anything wrong. That has nothing to do with where necessarily Bryce Underwood wants to play. It becomes just a total business transaction. And that's never been the case, really never been the case in recruiting. Maybe there's been some of that behind the scenes when it was illegal. But at the end of the day, there was a lot of emotion involved. I don't know how much emotion's involved in making decisions right now, because there's a lot of other people involved with a business decision in mind.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, that's as direct and, you know, accurate as you can put it.
Matt, let's talk about some guys who were on campus this weekend. First official visitor, the USC commit, in-state native, and Dewan Morris, running back. It feels like he had a really good time here at Tennessee.
Yeah, Austin Price caught up with him this afternoon. That visit went really well. You know, with Dewan Morris, he still had some things that he wanted to see. Family had some things that they wanted to see. Because USC, Eric, you and I have talked about it over at Trail Tidbits a lot. USC has done a really good job of recruiting Dewan Morris. You know, even as USC's class has fallen apart around them, they've continued to do a nice job of recruiting Dewan Morris and reminding him of why he committed out there in the spring. But Tennessee answered a lot of questions this weekend. That visit went very, very well for him. You know, now it's back home, and how fast do we make a decision? He's maintained that he doesn't want to drag this out. That's what he said, you know, at the first of the month when he was here for Kentucky. Once he saw the official visit, he felt like he would know pretty quickly. You know, so we'll kind of see where he goes in the next, you know, couple of days here.
A couple others, obviously, Brendan Ains is already committed in this class. Isaiah Campbell's the, you know, big fish out there. How did Tennessee fare with, you know, some of the other visitors who were on campus this weekend?
Yeah, you know, I think if you follow the visits, and you still should follow the visits, it's a really good sign for Tennessee to get Isaiah Campbell back. But now the more you talk to people, still feels like that one could go one, you know, either way. I mean, North Carolina's done a really good job. They're pushing to keep him home. But it feels like at this point for Tennessee, they've answered the questions on the academic side. He spent a lot of time around academic, you know, advisors, seeing what things look like on the business front. He spent some time around people that are around the Tennessee program that are highly successful in the business world. You know, family, you got to ask some questions in terms of that. The football fit has always made more sense in Tennessee, at Tennessee. I mean, Rodney Garner, the defensive line, the way they rotate, what he can do in the SEC, that's always made, I think, more sense in this recruitment. But North Carolina is about 20 minutes down the road, if that, for him. So I think that's the hurdle for Tennessee at this point. He's kicked around making a decision here, you know, early in the week, you know, before Thanksgiving. He's talked about November 26th. The more I've talked to some folks this afternoon, they wouldn't be surprised if that decision date fluctuated a little bit, maybe back closer to Thanksgiving or even into the weekend. But we'll see. It sounds like he doesn't want to take this all the way up to, you know, the start of the early signing period. But obviously that's an option that he has. And if you're getting there and you're having to try to decide between truly leaving home, when you're talking about not going to a school that's 20 minutes away roughly versus coming a few hours away, and that's what you're trying to get over, he may take this all the way up to the early signing period. But Tennessee, you know, from Coach Chopp to Coach Garner to Coach Heupel, they've absolutely put their best foot forward in this one and pretty much done all they can to get this one to the finish line. And to me, that's the final hurdle, is Isaiah Campbell willing to leave home.
Got a couple minutes left here. Let's answer some questions. Daryl wants to know, hey, does playing UTEP help us prepare for Vanderbilt because of the versatile quarterback? Yeah, I think so for sure. Skylar Locklear, you know, before his injury, was, you know, running all over the place. I thought Tennessee got too far upfield on the edges a little bit, lost contain. I thought, you know, guys were holding the rush lane, so obviously that's going to be a point of emphasis this week. Also, Brent, you wrote about this in your 10 things. Motions, shifts, the eye candy, right? And Vanderbilt's going to do an awful lot of that. So is UTEP going to be as good as Vanderbilt? Absolutely not. But some of the same concepts that, you know, Vanderbilt's going to try to work, you know, with Tennessee, work against Tennessee, you just saw from UTEP and Scotty Walden.
Yeah, I mean, you've got some Vanderbilt stuff that's going to feel like some option football, which is going to make you have to – your eyes are going to have to be good, and you're going to have to play the contain lanes, and you're going to have to do all the things you need to do. They're also going to try to get you misaligned with shifts and motions and things, and that's becoming much more popular. I mean, the phrase eye candy wasn't even used 3 years ago, right? Now everybody's got some eye candy, maybe except Tennessee. They don't do a lot of shifts and motions, but Tennessee's played a lot of teams that have done that and kind of moved around a little bit. Nobody did it as much as UTEP did it, Matt, and obviously Vanderbilt's going to show some of that. So I think it's good that Tennessee got a good dose of that this week as well. So I think there's some things that can carry over to Tennessee from a preparation standpoint that has nothing to do with necessarily the Jimmys and the Joes.
Yeah, I agree. And UTEP pulled multiple plays out of the back of the playbook to throw at Tennessee, you know, reverse pass, double pass, multiple different things, and had some success. Obviously, one got called back there. But if you're Tennessee, you got to understand this week that Vanderbilt has nothing to lose. You're the team that has everything to lose, and they're going to throw everything at you, and you need to be prepared for that. So to have some of that stuff on film to go back and, you know, have some teaching points, and then, like you said, that eye candy, that's something that's gave Tennessee trouble at times, be it in the swamp in 2023 or, you know, some of the stuff that Georgia did, and they dressed some stuff up in Athens earlier in the year. If you're Tennessee, you got to keep preparing for that. And, you know, to have a week like this against UTEP to where you can get younger guys and everyone else, that opportunity, I think, is very big.
Yeah. Vanderbilt team, already 6 wins, already bowl eligible, but boy, would they love to play spoiler and, you know, taking it to Tennessee and ending Tennessee's season. Plenty of motivation there in the Mid-State. It's going to be a good one this weekend.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, too. I know we're about out of time. I thought it was interesting. I thought LSU ran the ball really well against Vanderbilt. Tennessee's been a good running football team. You look at this matchup the last couple of years, Tennessee's run the ball extremely well against Vanderbilt. How much better is Vanderbilt against Tennessee's run game? Schematically, can Tennessee kind of get the numbers where they want and be successful running the football? I think that's going to be really key here, because I wonder if Vanderbilt's not going to be more committed to stopping that run and try to put it on Nico's shoulders on third down, where some other teams have kind of said, you know what, we'll let you run it a little bit. We don't think you can consistently do that without a holding penalty here or a negative play here to put you behind the sticks. But, man, Tennessee has really run the football effectively against Vanderbilt the last couple of years. What does that run game with Dylan Sampson look like Saturday afternoon?
Yep, Tennessee is a great running football team, and you know, ran for about 260 some odd yards yesterday as well. So that's the bread and butter. That's where it's all going to start for the Volunteers, and I'm intrigued to see what that looks like. Out the door real quick, let me ask about two more guys, Matt. Christian Gass, you caught up with him, still locked in with Tennessee. And then, of course, an elite 2026 offensive lineman, top 30 player in the country, and Darius Gray.
Man, Georgia's made it really hard on Christian Gass. I mean, they have pushed and pushed and pushed and did all they could to get him, you know, to stay home. It kind of felt like a final blow to them when he chose to go to the game in Athens as a spectator and not as a recruit, because he had friends in the recruiting section. You know, we'll see what happens. You never say never in today's world, but Christian Gass played a playoff game in Perry, Georgia on Friday night, over 2 hours away from Eastside over in Covington. He got up and was in Knoxville yesterday for a noon kickoff, and he told me at the after the game, or a 1 p.m. kickoff, he told me after the game, you know, that he wanted to let everybody know that he was home, he was locked in, and it certainly feels that way. Georgia's not going to quit. They want a linebacker in the class, but Tennessee has done an excellent job with Christian Gass. And then as far as Darius Gray, this is a guy Tennessee has prioritized. Tennessee has not been out on the road a lot during this evaluation period this fall, but with Darius Gray, Joey Halsley, Josh Heupel made their rounds up in Virginia and North Carolina, and they got into Virginia and they checked on Darius Gray, and he is feeling like a priority to this staff. He may end up being the best interior offensive line prospect in this upcoming class. He's a top 25 guy already in the on-three rankings, and he's been to Tennessee 5 times now. He's been to South Carolina about 8, but he's going to make some more trips. He'll be back down here in the winter. But for Tennessee, they you know, cut off some of the momentum that South Carolina's picked up this fall, and the Vols are right back in the thick of this race. You know, that will be decided sometime in the summer after official visits, but it was big to get him back and give him some of that one-on-one time.
It's amazing how many times underclassmen have already visited campus, you know, before they start their official visit tour, you know, that summer. But that's recruiting. That's the game right now. Fun show. Tennessee gets the win 56-0 over UTEP, but more importantly, a lot of things went their way around college football, and we'll see where Tennessee lands in the college football playoff rankings on Tuesday, but they will be back in the field, and it's as simple as this. You win, you're gonna have to go out in the playoffs. And so we're going to break down Tennessee and Vanderbilt as the week goes on. Big thanks to our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP for bringing us coverage here of the Rocket Top Rewind. You got a problem, let them find a solution for you. TN Trial Lawyers, that phone number is 423-245-4185. And you can visit them online at SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLLP.com. Brent Hubbs, I love to remind people on our podcast and on the show, like, thank you so much for watching and listening to us. Just the tip of the iceberg. Right now, we've got crossover season football, playoff talk, recruiting talk, basketball talk is happening right now as the season started. And there's no better place than the General's Quarters right now for insider information on the Tennessee Volunteers.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you're going into the last game of the regular season with everything in front of you that you've talked about the entire offseason. We're going to cover all of that. Then you're going to roll right into the month of December, which if Tennessee takes care of business, there's going to be a meaningful football game in there as a playoff game. You're going to have early signing day with Matt and Austin and all their coverage following David Sanders and everything that's going on here over the course of the next 10 days or so. You're going to have the transfer portal heat up. That's always going to be wild and interesting. I tell you what, it's going to be a fun time to be around. It's going to be a good time to be a part, to discuss everything. It's going to be a very stressful time for college football coaches around the country if you're in the playoff, because you're going to have a ton on your plate to manage here in the last, you know, 3 weeks or so when you talk about trying to get in the playoff, signing day, the transfer portal, and then if you're in the playoffs, you got to prepare to play a team who's a good team, by the way, who's trying to end your season in 60 minutes. So it's going to be pretty wild to see what happens, and we're going to cover it all for you.
Yeah, it's so wild because we always call it the silly season, like the month of December, but that's about to happen. And gosh, man, Tennessee is on the verge of playing a playoff game. So it's going to be a fun time. No better place to catch all the action, have a fun time doing it, conversating than over at VolQuest.com. For Matt Ray, Grant Ramey, Brent Hubbs, I'm Eric Kane. Big thanks as always to Spivey King and Spivey LLP. And big thank you guys for joining us here on the Rocky Top Rewind.